All right, welcome to episode 88 of the Bobbycast, and with Chris Stapleton. Good to see you, bud.
Good.
You know, I didn't know. I was like, I wonder if Chris is going to show up with all his people. Because when you come into the radio, like everybody, all the labels got to come.
Well, they're checking on you.
All the management's got, I got to come. And you just came to the house by yourself.
Yeah, pretty much.
Pretty much. Does he have guards outside the door waiting?
There's six security guards downstairs.
Those are mine, though. Yeah.
No, just me, man. Just me. Stop off on my way home.
I was, I have From A Room Volume 1, obviously. And some of two I've downloaded and streamed some of them. What was interesting to me, though, was that you had recorded all this before Traveler. Like, you had all these songs.
I hadn't recorded it.
But you had all the songs.
Oh, yeah. All these songs predate that, or they're in the same time frame. So there's nothing. There's nothing new, I guess, technically, as far as songwriting goes.
Does it feel like they're not new, though, or do they feel new since you just recorded them?
No, they're new to me in a lot of ways because a lot of them I've never played live. I've never, you know, attempted in bands or anything. You know, they're songs that I loved and have had around. And so, yeah, they're new in that sense. And they're always new to people that haven't heard them before, so it doesn't matter if they're 75 years old, nobody's ever heard of him. You know, it's all relative.
Would you do this again and do the two records somewhat close together?
Maybe, maybe not. I sure do like it because it gives, you know, it's my version of content. My label's always looking for content. And I was like, well, how about just more music?
Instead of a cute video piece, I'll just put out another record.
Yeah, that's kind of my version of content.
That's so funny.
Yeah.
Just more music. So, and we'll come back around to the record, I think. Do you realize how kind of mysterious you are to people?
No.
You don't? Because you are.
No. Am I?
Yeah, no, you are. Like, I'm telling you, like, there's this... This mysterious thing, because, you know, getting to know you over the past, you know, couple few years, you're not a guy that likes to be out talking on every microphone.
No.
And I think that makes people crave, oh, like, what's he doing?
But that's not anything that's deliberate. That's just how I am. You know what I'm saying? That's not... I didn't mean to interrupt you, Bobby.
No.
You know, some people might think that's some kind of plan or a ploy or something, but I like to talk to people that I enjoy talking to, and I'm okay with that. And I realize that you know, I have, you know, an obligation to myself to go talk a little bit, even though that's not the most comfortable space for me. I'd rather be on a stage, you know, playing. But that's, you know, sometimes talking about myself is hard. You know, that's a hard thing to do. Like, it's a hard thing to get used to. Like, well, tell me about yourself. You know, like everybody, you know, if you've never done that before, do you remember the first time somebody ever told you to tell them about yourself? Like,
I think I had to force my, like, seriously, I come from a place where nobody wanted to know about me. Okay. You know, so I think I always had to make people go, hey, don't forget about me. So it was different for me. Like, I felt like I had to make people notice me.
Okay. Maybe. I don't know. I don't. And everybody's experience is different, but I was just never comfortable. I kind of like to do my thing and just hang out. You know, I'm okay.
It's weird you bring that up. I was in therapy today. I don't know if you've ever done therapy. I was in therapy today.
Sure, yeah.
I was talking to my therapist, and it was... So I grew up, and I didn't have a dad growing up. He left. My mom died of a drug overdose in her 40s, and so she was an addict, and she was an alcoholic, and so I never really had a relationship with either one of them. Like, I literally never had a conversation with a parent my entire life. Like, not a single conversation.
Wow.
So, I was talking to him today about it, and it's weird when you start to kind of dive into these things, and you try to, you know, climb back through these memories. And it was that I always had to fight for attention because I didn't get it because I didn't have... It's funny you asked that question. I just went through this today. And I'm
right.
That was my thing. I had to, like, crave, fight for attention. Wherever it was, school, because I didn't get it at home.
Right.
So when you say that, I just had this conversation. I paid $140 to have this conversation.
You could just call me, man.
Yes. I could have saved a bunch of money and just did this. So, you growing up, living in Kentucky, what was it like? What was it like around the house?
Well, it was very different. You know, I had both my parents, and both of my parents were very, you know, kind of straight, folks, and I had a great home life really growing up, and so I was real fortunate in that, and I'm so sorry about that. I didn't know all that, man.
I wasn't saying that. I'm just an open book.
And I realize that, and I'm realizing I made a comment about drinking earlier, and I'd probably
And that's the thing for me too. I fake drinking so people don't go, hey, I don't want to drink. Because for me, I've never had a drink of alcohol.
Yeah.
But it's not because I want to drink like crazy. Like, I would love, but I know, Chris, I would drink it all.
Yeah, well, and that, you know, at this point, I don't know how old you are now, but yeah, probably.
I would drink everything. Yeah. I would just not one drink. I would have all the drinks.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, yeah, no.
Are you an all or nothing guy? Because I'm that guy too. Yeah.
I'm an addict.
For anything.
Yes.
Phones, walking down the street.
Yeah. It does.
Exercise.
If it's a Subway sandwich, I must have the same sandwich every day for 3 months.
Right. If you like it.
If I like it.
You're in. Yeah.
And it's the same thing every day.
Okay. Yeah. I'm with you.
So that's why I don't. That's why I don't. You know, touch it. Although,
I got you. It's smart.
Let me ask you a question.
All right.
You're giving me an honest opinion. So, I've never had a drink of alcohol, and I've never tried an illegal drug, and I've never smoked weed, but like I have my stress. It's so hardcore. My anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
I've been thinking about it. It's not legal here, but like these edibles.
Yeah, I mean. They have things in Colorado and places like that where it's not even like to get you high. It's just like.
But wouldn't I want to get high though? Like if I were gonna
probably, but if you're gonna have fun, but
it's like eating cheesecake, but it doesn't taste good.
Well, you know, it just some of it just makes you want to go to sleep and eat a Big Mac, and not necessarily in that order, or sometimes in that order. You know, it's just but I think. It definitely would have, if you need something to mellow you out.
That's what I need, something to mellow me out.
I think that way more than alcohol is, and I'm probably, getting controversial or something out here, but I've met a lot more people who are a lot more even on that than people who are, Jekyll and Hyde on alcohol. I think, personally, I think it's a lot safer than alcohol. I'm not a doctor in any way endorsing any medical things about it, but I think that there's enough research around that it could help somebody. There's real medicinal purposes for it.
Even in athletics, these football players are like, "Hey, listen, you're putting us on all these prescriptions, but this, medicinal marijuana, like you are talking about cutting the pain out, and it being natural." Listen, and I've never tried it, but I'm such an advocate of it. It's odd. I've never once touched it, but I'm such an advocate of it.
But listen, if it was completely legal and it had no... Are you a rule follower? Because I'm a bit of a rule follower on some levels. But if it was legal, like all of a sudden it was federally legal, and all of a sudden you could go down to wherever and get it in a non-mind-altering way to help anxiety, would you take it then?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, because it'd be... If the doctor was like, yeah, sure.
Yeah.
I had trouble because I got addicted to sleeping pills because I don't sleep well. I get high anxiety. And I got addicted to sleeping pills. And I had to go and, for lack of a better term, I had to like clean up and just go through with all the withdrawals. And they got really sick. And so...
Sleeping pills are horrible, man. I had bad insomnia when I was a kid. And I had to take sleeping pills. Or I didn't have to. I tried taking sleeping pills.
They mess you up?
It was the worst thing ever. I hated it.
Did you ever wake up and not remember? Like, because I would wake up... And look at my computer, and I'd like FaceTime like five people, and I never drunk dialed anybody, but I sleeping pill dialed people.
Well, back then they didn't have like Ambien. Was it Ambien? What were you taking?
Yeah, it's Edular, which is kind of like Ambien.
I don't know enough about sleeping pills, but whatever they had me on, I would sleep like a rock for like 12 hours, and then the other 12 hours I was like a zombie. That's what sleeping pills did to me. I don't like sleeping pills. I don't like pills in general, But, they're necessary things sometimes. But
I was reading this book about sleep. Do you feel like you sleep okay?
No.
No, you don't?
No, I'm not a good sleeper most of the time.
I was reading this book about sleep, and they talk about how it's like oxygen. Like, you can't really catch up on oxygen.
Right.
And sleep, if you don't get your sleep, you just miss out on it.
Right.
Like, that's the new thing. You can't, not sleep for a few days and then catch up on a Saturday. You just didn't get enough sleep, and so your brain didn't get enough sleep, so it's not going to function as well, and long term, it could hurt you.
Yeah.
And so I was just fascinated.
And that gives you anxiety because you think about...
Oh, yeah. I think about not
sleeping.
I get anxiety thinking about the anxiety that I might get.
Yeah, I understand.
Oh, you get me. I appreciate that.
Yeah. No, man. It's a chicken and egg situation where you just can't... You know, you get in that cycle. It's a bad thing. You probably exercise a bunch.
I try to do everything that I can do to surround the fact that I don't sleep well. I exercise a lot. I eat pretty much A+.
Yeah.
I, you know, same with prayers, even vitamins, Hulk Hogan, all that stuff.
Hulk Hogan.
Yeah, all that.
What is Hulk Hogan vitamins?
No, that's what I hate to say. Hey, say your prayers and eat your vitamins.
Oh, you gotcha.
Yeah, back in the day. Okay. And so I do all that, and, you know, but yeah, the sleep, I got off sleep. I can't take sleeping pills, but all that aside, anyway, I was learning about.
Did you try like natural, like melatonin?
Oh, that stuff doesn't work for me. Like, I cover my body in essential oils. Like, I've tried melatonin. I've tried
snorting lavender.
Try to put it in the butt. I take it and take it right in the bloodstream. Take it right in the old butthole.
Right on. That's the weirdest sentence I've ever heard.
You grew up, your parents musical?
My mom is a really kind of pretty, kind of Julie Andrews sounding singer. And she would sing, you know, Cleaning the House. But neither of them. And my dad could hold a tune, but he was more of a radio player. But he liked to play it loud. So.
But did they have music to teach you?
No.
As in the skill of it?
Oh, no. Nothing trained necessarily. My mom could play the piano a little bit.
Yeah.
But it was never... had an uncle who played guitar, and he would show me things when I would see him. And, you know, the cool thing about if you're a kid with a guitar, any musician's always willing to show a kid something, you know, if they see a kid getting into it, because they remember being a kid and some guy who knew something showing them something. And so anytime you see kids that are musicians, I think every musician's always willing to help them out. So that's the majority of my education came from that. Musically.
Did that fascinate you when you were a kid, seeing the guitar and the music?
Yeah, you know, I don't remember being fascinated by it, but my mother would say that I spent, you know, like 12 hours a day playing guitar at one point, and I don't remember doing that. I just, you know, it was time flies when you're having fun.
But you were a really good student.
I was a better than average student.
No, not better than average. Like, you're a valedictorian.
That's true. That part's true.
Look at this. Now,
sleeping pills and all.
Valedictorian.
I blame sleeping pills.
You can downplay it all you want, but you're a valid. So, were you the smart kid? Were you the kid?
I mean, I guess I'm smart enough to, you know, get good grades and stuff.
I can always tell when you turn into humble Chris because you don't look me in the eyes. Whenever you start to feel uncomfortable, this is the history of us. And I'm like, Chris, I love this song. You know, we're talking about songs. I don't like praise either. I feel very uncomfortable and you don't like praise.
Everybody likes praise to some degree.
You feel uncomfortable. Like when I say, hey, you were valedictorian, you were very smart.
But you just got done telling me that millions of people listen to this too. I'm just like, this is millions of people listening to me.
You've sold millions of records.
Well, I don't know, but I don't know.
You're valedictorian, and I don't think people would know that about you.
Well, they do now.
So... Did you give up and give the speech? You do the whole thing where you're like, I'm Chris Stapleton.
You know, oddly enough, I didn't want to do it. I am terrified of public speaking. I don't like public
you
speaking.
You didn't speak at your high school graduation?
I didn't, but let me tell you what I did. I wrote a song and played a song.
Oh, that's such a Stapleton thing to do.
Yeah, straight up played a song.
What was that song?
I don't remember, but I wrote a song, you know, some farewell graduation song and played a song.
It's probably called Outlaw Valedictorian.
Yeah, that was exactly what it was called.
So that's what you did. You play. How many people in your graduating class in high school?
Oh, like 250.
Okay, like so pretty.
It was okay, you know.
Look at this, a valedictorian, 250 kids. What'd you want to be when you were 10th grade?
When I was in 10th grade?
Yeah, like when you were just starting.
I only wanted to play football. That's all I wanted to do.
And you're a pretty athlete.
I was okay, yeah.
Here we go. I was okay. What position do you play?
Linebacker and fullback.
So you like to hit.
Mm-hmm.
See, I played wide receiver and then defensive back because I didn't like to hit. And I
went. Come on, you never blitzed one time playing defensive back. He's never snuck up in there.
No, listen, I'm going to tell you. When I'd have to I play wide receiver, have to crack back on a linebacker, I would just go, I would drop down and go straight to the hips. I'm not trying to hit anybody. I was tiny. Like, I was five. I'm 6 foot, 6 foot one, about 170 now. Back then, I was like 5'9", 140.
Yeah.
What were you in high school?
I'm like playing weight.
Yeah.
10th grade.
Yeah. 10th, 11th grade. Yeah.
Oh, I probably, you know, I was the same height I am now. I was about 6 foot and, you know, 200 pounds, 210.
You good?
I was okay.
Yeah. You looked me in the eyes when you said you were at the
sea. See? Yeah. I'd say I'm okay.
That one you like.
I love football.
Still?
Well, you know, there was a period in my life where I didn't want to watch football because I wanted to play so bad, you know. So, but I was okay. I just, you know, you get to a certain level in football and you realize that some of us are not like the other people, you know, like you walk in the weight room and everybody's 6'7", 270, running to 4'6", 40, and you're just like, oh, that's not me.
Did you feel like you want to play college ball?
Oh, yeah. No, yeah. That was – and I thought – and you know, when you're 18, you think you can, you know.
And did you try?
I went on some visits and I wound up trying to walk on playing someplace, and that didn't really work out, but it's all right. It's better. You know, all my buddies that played college ball, whether they played 1AA or anything, they all have like these weird pains now from where played college ball. And I'm so glad that I didn't play. And I'm so glad, you know, with all the, because talking about anxiety things, I think I have that thing that all the NFL guys get sometimes.
The hardcore stuff, the CTE?
Yeah, like, oh, if I feel like depressed or something, it's definitely, I had concussions, you know. I'm almost certain I had concussions when I played football, but. You know, back then it was like rub some dirt on it and get back out there. You know?
Oh, we didn't even get water.
No.
Like, it was a prize to get water. During 2 days, it was the prize to get water. If that happened now, CPS would come and just take all the kids. They're not even their kids. All the coaches, they would just put them all in jail.
Yeah, they'd all be in jail.
It's a different time.
It's a different time. And you know, some of it would say no. And, you know, I'm all for, you know, sucking it up and playing. But I worry a lot about that sport in general. You know?
Yeah, I don't think football... As is now, because I did a national sports show for a long time, so I'm a huge sports geek. Football doesn't last another 10 years as it is right now. You can't have as many people that violent hitting heads over and over again. And we're just now seeing, we're finally seeing our guys be sick. We're finally seeing the Jim McMahons, even the Brett Favre, like the people that we grew up watching start to be, and so we're going, wow, now it's a real thing.
Yeah.
Because it's on TV and social media. And so, yeah, I'm glad I didn't make it to the NFL either. You know what I mean?
Right. And but I would have if I could have, you know, because I love that sport that much. And as violent as it is, you know, maybe not knowing what I know now. But there's something poetic about it. You know, there's poetry in football. That it's not – I don't know. I like it.
So you play ball and that was kind of – were you writing music and – as you were playing football, were you like that?
Not as much. You know, I got more into that when I got into college and didn't enjoy college as much. So, I mean, I always played a little bit here and there and, you know, did different things. But
school, didn't you move to town into Nashville, go to school here, then leave and go back home?
Mm-hmm.
So, isn't it this weird thing that you were such a good student in high school, then you get to college and it's not for you?
Well... You know, college is a different deal, you know, you pick a major or something, and, you know, I chose an engineering major, and just because my dad was an engineer, and, you know, you don't know what you want to be when you're 18. I think it's real important. I think it's hard for people to figure out, or some people are fortunate to know what they want to be when they're 12, but I wasn't one of those people, you know, and, but I was fortunate enough to pick... things that I just through sheer not wanting to do them, I figured out I didn't want to do. And so I took a lot of me trying some different things on, you know, how does this fit? Is this going to be my life? No. All right, let's try something else. And I think sometimes it's a scary thing to do for a lot of people, but I think it's important to do in order to find what you're really supposed to be doing.
So you go, how hard was that to go, all right, this is not for me, I'm going back home? Was that tough?
Yes and no, not really. It was so like obvious that what I was trying to do, everything, all I pay attention to the universe a whole lot. And the universe was like, no, this is not your thing, man.
He didn't feel fulfilled doing it at all.
No, not at all.
So you move back home, then what do you do?
Well, I went to college in Kentucky for a couple of years, and then didn't really love that either.
And you study what, though? Because you didn't study the same thing, obviously.
I was in business school for a couple of years.
So you're going to be, well, you were going to be what, Chris Stapleton?
I don't know. I was just doing it.
Accountant?
Yeah, well, I hated accounting, but I liked economics, you know. No, you see, but it wasn't for me, so it didn't take. I was just like, you know, this is okay. I don't want to sit in a room and do this for the rest of my life. I couldn't do it.
I like it.
Let me talk about a sleep number thing.
Yeah, yeah. Let me talk about sleep number for a second. So we do the show, and it's in the room upstairs in my house, and upstairs in my house, also my bedroom. And so in my bedroom, I will tell you, there is a sleep number bed. Now is a great time to visit a sleep number store where, even this week, you can save up to 50% on the ultimate limited edition bed with Sleep IQ technology and queen mattresses start only $699.99. Wish you could all just kind of take a little layover in the bed over there. Well, some of you. 9 out of 10 couples disagree on mattress firmness. I'm not part of that because as you hear this, it's just me and the dog, and he's good. The Sleep Number bed lets you choose your ideal comfort and support on each side, so it's just right for the both of you. And there's even adjustment for snoring. I do love my Sleep Number bed. I have had two of them, three of them. I don't even know if I've had. But I love them so much. My Sleep IQ score last night was I don't know what it was. My setting is 30. Sleep Number beds cost about the same as the traditional mattresses. They last twice as long, and 91% of owners recommend them. And right now, go in Monday, save 50% on the ultimate limited edition bed. 550 stores nationwide. Call 800-NEXT-BED and tell them that I sent you. All right, so you're in Kentucky. You decide again that's not for you. So it's time to move back to Nashville.
Well, it's not that short. There was some, I moved into a house with some friends and just worked different jobs. You know,
here or there?
In Kentucky, but okay, not in my hometown, in a different town.
What'd you do? What kind of jobs did you do?
Oh, I drove. You ever see at the gas station, it's like the Home City Ice, where you get the ice out of the cooler outside? I drove the Home City Ice truck.
You delivered ice to
delivered ice.
I used to bag ice. It is miserable. Did you have to bag the ice or did you just drive
it? No, I didn't have to bag it. I just delivered it.
All right. You were one of the higher uppers. We used to live. Yeah. There were two times.
Did you work at Home City Ice?
No. But I used to bag ice, and different ice companies would get ice from us. And so I would bag ice all day. Bag ice all day. And we would be like, oh, there's the fancy delivery guy. It's like when I did maintenance on a
golf
course.
Come on, I'm a fancy delivery guy.
Well, at the
guy.
Time, you would have been. I'd have been like, man, oh, there's the Stapleton fellow who thinks he's better than us. I worked on a golf course,
to
too.
The ice.
And it was a weed eater on golf course maintenance. And I'd always look at the cart guys and be like, they think they're better than us because of the cart guys. Yeah. So you delivered ice.
I delivered ice, you know. You ever been in a parking lot and you got like a coupon for a pizza on your car?
Oh, yeah, you put those under the windshield wipers.
I was the dude to put them under the windshield wipers.
Now, listen, that can't pay a whole lot.
It was an hourly rate.
Yeah.
And I just did it when I didn't have any gigs.
And so you were playing, at this time, you were playing music then?
Yeah, I'd play, you go play bars, do top 40 gigs, the four-hour shift. But sometimes you need extra money. I happened to live with a guy who managed Papa John's at the time. So he'd be like, hey, man.
Papa John's, not the band. He's not managing the band Papa John's.
No, is there a band called Papa John's?
No, but it sounds like in this town, somebody's always managing somebody. But
no, he was not managing a Papa John's band.
Or Papa John, the guy.
He was managing a Papa John's restaurant.
Yes.
And he'd be like, hey, man, just go coupon some cars for me. And so I'd go work for 2 or 3 hours doing that.
Would you ever take them and just like throw them? Like, you got a whole stack of them here, and you're like, oh, come on. And just like dump them offside a little bit.
No. That's not me.
Yeah, me either.
I couldn't do that. I would feel so guilty about that.
I guess if it's your buddy too.
Yeah. No, I wouldn't do that to him.
What does that pay per hour to go out and?
Oh, I don't know. It was minimum wage. Whatever.
Probably like $6.
Maybe less than that.
So you're playing it. Are you doing the cover songs at the bar? Are you playing originals?
Mainly just cover stuff, whatever gig comes up, we go play the Army ROTC's having a ball. We'll go play the 4-hour Army ROTC gig.
And, who's we?
Whoever we can find to be the band at the time.
Oh, yeah.
I had a group of buddies. And JT, who's my bass player, was in that group, you know, of guys where, you know, somebody, hey, man, I got this gig. You know, all right, cool, what is it? What do we got to play? All right, let's go. And back then we were so miserably bad at business, we would change our band name every time we had a different gig, you know, just to be funny, because we thought it was funny, you know. And in hindsight, there's the absolute worst way to build a following is to change your band name every time. But, you know, yeah, we did lots of, you know, it could be some kind of a folk old-time gig, or it could be a top 40, you know, playing Roller Coaster for 4 hours while dudes did keg stands, you know. It's just whatever was paying.
When you're playing those shows back then, because you're known now for how strong your voice is, how powerful your voice is, by the people that don't know your songwriting, like the people that have in the last couple of years say, I really enjoy this Chris Stapleton. You're known for your distinct voice, your powerful voice. Even then, when you're playing in the VFW or wherever you're playing, were people like, holy crap? Or did that take time to develop for you?
You know, I don't know. I mean, a lot of things that you play when you're in those modes, you know, the bar band just kind of becomes background noise. You know, nobody's in there really trying to dig into what the bar band's singing about. And particularly if you're singing cover tunes, they're just like, oh, he's all right. You know, he doesn't sound like whoever it is you're covering, because you're not going to, you know, you're just going to be a bar band version of that.
But if you played a bar right now, and there are people everywhere, people will stop and go, what is that? If you put on one of those prosthetic faces and you went and sang, people would, that wouldn't be background noise.
I don't know. You know, it'd be a good experiment. We could, you know, we could make that happen, I'm sure.
That
be like, what's that movie with Travolta and
Nicolas Cage, Face Off. It's terrible. Yeah. Did you watch that movie?
Yeah, absolutely.
You
know what? If that movie's on, I have to watch it.
I'm not saying it was a bad movie, but it was a terrible premise. I don't know how the movie got greenlit. Like,
well, I don't either, but
we're going to cut each other's faces off and beat each other and then fight each other.
At the time, with those two guys in it, it was nobody was going to lose. Everybody was going to go watch it.
Face Off. I haven't thought about that movie since I watched it the first time. Went, what a terrible concept. It wasn't a bad movie.
No, it wasn't bad. I think it was on the bus the other day. That's why it's on my mind. But I actually didn't watch it, though. I passed over it. There was something else I liked better. I don't know.
On your bus, did you have DirecTV on the bus?
Yeah.
Okay, so we do too. I have DirecTV. And maybe, I don't know if the buses just suck, but whenever the bus is moving, I can't keep that thing on solid. Is that a normal thing?
That's normal. That's
even the Chris Stapletons can't get DirecTV to stay on as the bus is moving.
Listen, man, when a door opens on my bus, my TV shuts off. So don't, if you can get just the TV to stay on when your door's open and closed, you're doing better than me.
What do you do? Okay, well, I'll be out because, you know, I have 8 jobs, right? Like, I'm writing books and I'm just trying to survive.
Right.
You know? But when I'm out on the road, like I was out, we're out this weekend, I got so I get bored. Because you just got to fill space up. Because in the daytime, you get a huge sound check. You got like 4 hours. But again, you have a
while. You know what you need?
What?
Nap time.
I try to take a nap, and I do take a nap sometimes. And I even got a my dog is sick, so I take my dog out on the road with me. And so I put I have the Star bus now, because I'm a diva right now. Mm-hmm. Not usually. Usually with 12 bunks, we're all the same. But now it's a Star bus because I need my dog on the road.
That's how it starts, man. You get a dog on the road.
Next thing you know, I'm Beyonce, right?
Right.
I know, yeah. So I tried that. I tried the nap thing. Bed, I can hurt my back. I'm very sensitive. I'm like a little lily.
The beds aren't great on buses.
Even like, your
the
bunks?
The bunks are better. I prefer, you know.
You sleep in a bunk?
No, I sleep in a bed because me and my wife have a bed. But, you know, there's no version of a bed on a bus that's actually big enough for two people to sleep in. But we do it, I think, out of principle. But it's interesting, you know, and the roads in the United States are really bad right now. They all need work. I don't know where you've been going through lately, but
everywhere that needs work. Yeah, I've been to all those places you're mentioning right now.
Like, you're from Arkansas, right?
I am, yeah.
Yeah, Arkansas is one of the worst, man.
One of the worst. And you can tell the difference when you cross Tennessee into Arkansas.
Yeah.
Like, immediately when you cross, it's like...
Yeah, we were there this past weekend. Yeah, so it's fresh on my mind as the one that has potholes. New York City's pretty bad when you roll up and through there, or, you know, New York in general,
Cause I love that you remember my state as the bad road state. Like, yeah, Arkansas.
I got an aunt there. Yeah, yeah. I got cousins there. It's all good. I'm not picking on just your state.
You can. That's all right.
Apologies to all Arkansas people.
Listen, you're from Kentucky.
Listen,
you're
we should start same. A GoFundMe page for the Arkansas highways.
I think we've tried that. Yeah. I don't think that worked. So, yeah, to look at the pictures of the shows, it's been so crazy to watch the growth. There's been two artists that I've seen grow like I've watched this grow, this part of you, chapter of Chris Stapleton. You and Sam, and you're not the same, but it's like nobody, it kind of came out of nowhere, completely organic, and it's been boom. Songwriting first, like paying dues, writing songs for people. Like, yeah. That's why, like, is that why you moved to town to write songs? Right?
I moved to town to be a songwriter. I thought that sounded like the greatest job I'd ever heard of, the instant I heard of it.
Even though singing like you did, you weren't like, I can go be an artist?
Well, let's be honest. You know, sitting in a room playing a guitar for maybe 3 hours a day and getting paid to do that is probably still the greatest job in the world.
Would you rather sit in a room and write a great song with one of your songwriter buddies or play on stage for 15,000 people?
I like to play, so that's hard to say, but I like to write a good song too. But, you know, at this point, I'd probably have to pick playing because I like playing. I like playing a whole lot.
Do you ever get to where I'm getting kind of tired of playing? I just kind of want to write songs for a few months?
No. I mean, certainly if you're not feeling 100%, if you're sick, you know, there's times I'm sure you get out there not sleeping and working 9 days a week where you're just like, I wish I could just, you know, chill out just a minute. But the fear will keep you going.
The fear. I have fear. I'm terrified that I feel like, and I don't know if you feel this way because I'm obviously nuts, but I feel like I've been committing crimes for a long time and eventually the cops are going to catch me. And when they do, my career is over because they've got me, or everyone's going to figure out that I'm not even. It's imposter syndrome where you feel like.
Absolutely.
Like
I think a lot of people feel that. Not a lot of people will verbalize it, you know. But I had somebody that, and I won't say his name, but, you know, was a hero of mine, have that very thing. He's like, I'm just waiting for everybody to figure it out. And I'm just like, even you feel that way. I was like, okay, all right.
Do you feel that way?
Oh, sure. Everybody, you know, to some degree, nobody, you know. But then, the flip side of that coin, I used to say to people when you walk in to meet somebody, be like, how you doing, man? I'd be like, well, I'm far better than I deserve. I used to say that to people. And then I met somebody, and they were walking up on the bus, and it was another artist, and he said, well, me too. But, you know, maybe we all deserve great things. And it really made me, it took me aback for a minute, and I was just like, wow, that's... okay, maybe we do, and maybe that makes it okay, you know, like maybe that can make the fear go away a little bit if you just think that we all probably deserve great things, you know, not all of us get it, but I think everybody certainly deserves it.
Do you get in your own head a lot, you feel like?
I can in a moment, and yeah, I get in my own head quite a bit. That's probably why I don't talk that much.
What's your fear?
Fear?
Yeah, of getting in your own head and talking. Like, what's the worst that can happen in your mind? What you say, you know, I don't want to. I get in my own head, so that's why I don't.
I might get in my own head on stage sometimes. That's the worst place for it to happen to me. You know, like maybe I don't like how something's sounding, or I don't like the way a guitar feels at the moment. You know, or it's, you know, any little thing that can happen. You know. Is the danger for me to go completely off the edge and just like not be able to dig myself out of that moment. It's bad when I go down, but I try to avoid it.
Will you go down like that? Cause I'll go down like that.
Absolutely. And it can ruin my whole day and everybody else's whole day. So I try to be conscious of it and not do it.
For me, my co-host Amy can notice that. And she's the one that goes boom, and she'll try to pull me out of it.
Yeah,
is that what Morgan does for you?
Absolutely, absolutely.
Because she can see it sometimes, or she can see it happening when maybe you can't, or you're just starting.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah, same thing.
It's a slippery slope because part of the creative part of you needs to be in that space.
Well, yeah, you got to be on the edge. You just can't fall off of it.
Do do you feel like sometimes you don't want to fix yourself because you'll lose your edge? Do you ever have that thought?
Not till now. Thank God. Okay.
Never mind. Scratch that. Scratch that question. Because that's something I'll be like, I don't know if I should get better because I'll lose it.
No, you know, I used to think those kind of things. But I always feel like there's room for improvement. And if something's making your overall health or life better, it's not necessarily, it's not losing your edge. You know, I feel like those things, it's not losing edge. It's just, it's making you sharper.
You finish a show, you come off stage. What's the first thing you do?
Finish a show?
Yeah.
I thank all the local crew guys for the work. And, a lot of times my wife is retired for the evening before the encore is over, so I'll go find out where she is and see if she needs anything, and then I'll probably wind up hanging with the band guys for a few minutes in the dressing room and then hit the bus, and I'll be up till 2 or 3 in the morning watching Face Off.
For the 80th time.
For the 80th time.
Do you go back and listen to shows like your live shows and criticize and, or love on yourself?
No. I try not to. I mean, we do record now, and we have a pretty elaborate recording rig. We basically, gotta have as much of that kind of stuff as we can have out there for cataloging, and we're trying to put together some live things. But it's a real boy. That microscope's tough, you know, on live shows, you know, because there's so much other external things going on, you know, that sometimes you can be too hard on yourself. So you have to really listen to it in a with a different set of ears than maybe you would listen to something you're really picking on in a studio. So,
will you look at a crowd, and when you look at a crowd, will you focus on the people that are having a great time, or will you see the one that's like,
Anybody that's been in my show knows that I don't look at the crowd a whole lot, because that a little bit can break focus for me. Like, I'll look at the crowd when I'm not playing, and I'll try to interact with them in that way. But if I do look out there and I see somebody not having a good time, it can do that thing we're talking about.
Yeah.
Or if I see somebody having too good of a time, it will make me smile. It'll make me too happy, and I'll forget what I'm doing. So I'm very ADD that way. So I have to be real careful about, eye contact. I do a very controlled version of it for myself, just to try to and make sure I don't lose focus of what I'm doing in the circle of everybody in the band, you know.
Yeah, I didn't know that, because I do. And I've seen you play a bunch, and you do kind of keep down a bit when you play.
Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah, you know, you're inside the circle.
I'm like somebody can see me over the radio or whatever this is, but I'm very much in the guitar, and I'm in singing, and I'm in with the rest of the band. That's where the stuff's happening, and when that's not going on, then the interaction happens a little bit more in the crowd. Maybe if I take a solo, I'll step out front just for a minute, and we can give a little glance here and there. But for the most part, I try to keep, there's this like little circle happening on stage, no matter where we're playing, that I'm trying to stay in that circle.
That circle too is important to you, huh?
Oh yeah.
The people in that circle.
Absolutely.
They're the same people on the record.
Absolutely.
Why are they so important to you?
We wouldn't be sitting here talking if it wasn't for the people in that circle. You know, none of this would be what it is, and none of it would be happening at all if it weren't for the people in that circle.
You really care about them, huh?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Man, I'm just looking at your eyes. I can tell. You just, I feel like with me, I'm as good as the people around me are. Like, I surround myself with people to make me better.
Right, and that's one of the best things you can do if you want to be better. Surround yourself with the best people you can find, and whatever. And that extends into, you know, when we're on the road with a pretty, what I would consider a good sized crew, and everybody in that crew is that for us. And I think that's the key to putting on a successful tour is you get the absolute best people to work with you can find at all times. And
that's four on stage.
But the four on stage, yeah,
that's the fist for you. That's you.
The fist?
Yeah, it's the tight. Like right there. Those four. I mean, it sounds like ten, but it's you four.
Yeah. No, that's the, you know, and then, you know, Dave Cobb's in there when he wants to be in there, and, you know, Mickey Raphael's in there when he has meant to be in there. And,
Dave Cobb can be wherever he wants to be, whenever he wants to be. Like that dude.
But typically Dave likes to show up for things that are really easy travel or very high profile. Those are Dave's two. He'll tell you as much. He likes, you know.
Those are the best things to go to. Yeah. You know, those are the easiest things to go to. So, let me talk about Blue Apron for just a second. I think if you're listening to this, you like convenience. It's like a, you know, with the Bobby Cash, you can hit the button and start and stop whenever you want. But talking about food, convenience is Blue Apron. And if you go to blueapron.com/BobbyCast, you're listening to this, you'll get your first dinner, $30 value. If you visit again, blueapron.com/BobbyCast, comes to your door, it's in a box. Has all the pre-portioned ingredients. You have to eat it right then because you're going to make it later. Home-cooked meal, you make it later. All the ingredients are pre-portioned. And not only that, it's got a card, tells you how to make it exactly. They're delicious. And some of the meals, like seared steaks and garlic butter with oven fries and romaine salad. Like, let's be honest, you'd never be able to make that. But I put that down as one of the ones that I've made because I was pretty good. I finished it. I was like, dang, pretty good. But really, it's about Blue Apron. I said, you're going to love it. You're going to be like a chef to whomever you're cooking it for. Don't even tell them you're using Blue Apron. Lie to them. Be like, I spent all day slaving over the stove. BlueApron.com/BobbyCast. There you go. Blue Apron, better way to cook. All right. So, all right, let's switch it up a bit. You played for Tom Petty. You got to play at Wrigley with Tom Petty.
Yes.
I don't know anyone who loves music, you know, just genreless music, that didn't love Tom Petty.
If you don't love Tom Petty, I don't know what's the matter with you.
You may need to go
seek some kind of help. It's, you know, if you can't find something in some of Tom Petty's music that you like, I worry about you a little bit.
When you're playing before Tom, with Tom, did you take a second and like take it in when you were on stage?
Absolutely. First of all, we're at Wrigley Field.
Right.
The first show we played with him was at Wrigley Field. And so that alone would be enough to be like, hey, we're playing at Wrigley Field. But then you add to the fact that we're there with Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers. It's, you know, that's, you know, if you told 17-year-old me that was going down, my head would blow up. And it still felt that way a whole lot, you know. 17-year-old me showed up that day. It was like,
really?
Yeah, I was just like, yeah, Wrigley Field with Tom Petty. Sounds great.
You still get excited?
Four shows?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Every night's a new thing, you know, because, you know, we don't run tracks. We don't do any of that kind of stuff. So every night, anything can happen.
Which is crazy because, again, it's for the most part, it's four people on stage.
Yes.
And you don't run tracks. That's why I'm saying it sounds like 10 people up there.
Well, we're just playing you're as hard that good. As we can.
And, and you're playing the lead.
I am.
And you're singing.
Mm-hmm.
I watch it, and I'm just like, okay, are you harsher on, let's say you're doing a solo. Will you pick apart? You're like, oh, man, I really screwed that up.
Well, I'm going to screw. Let's just get one thing out of the way. I'm going to screw up a solo at some point in a show, and probably two or three solos in a show. But, hey, it's that way, you know, it's live, and I've learned to just laugh it off a little bit, you know, and then see if I can find my way back home, you know. So it's soloing is a very new thing to me, really. It's really only something I've started doing pretty much right before the travel record, because I had two guys in the band quit, and it got down to me and JT and Derek, and we had three gigs that weekend. I was like, hey, do you think we can cover this? And they're like, I don't know.
So it's you, a bass player, and a drummer. You really don't have many options except to play the solo.
It was out of necessity that I started doing it. And I was like, well, maybe I can cover it. Maybe I'll figure something out. And then, you know, from there, I've learned to forgive myself my shortcomings as a guitar player and just, you know, enjoy it. Because I do enjoy playing guitar. I really do. It's probably as much as I enjoy singing. I enjoy it. So you know, maybe someday I'll wake up and be a real boy, you know, like be a real guitar player, you know.
Whenever you hurt yourself, you just didn't want to sing. You didn't want anybody to come in. Was that a, like a, when you hurt your hand, you didn't want to not be able to do both?
Well, so much of our show is, like I said, we don't run tracks. There's not a roadmap necessarily for what we do. A lot of it is very much something we've developed over time of, all right, I'm going to do this here. And you know, and like Derek will feel things coming when I'm playing that he can catch. And so much of our show is that if I can't play, we can't do the show, because nobody coming in is going to have that, you know, understanding of the musicianship within the circle of the piece. It's just not going to work. It's going to be something different, and I feel like that's selling it a little short, and I don't like that.
When you had to cancel the shows, that sucked for you? That
Yeah, well, it sucked worse for the people that had tickets and plans than it did for me. You know, I had to deal with, you know, it's still a little aggravating to deal with, but, you know, I felt worse about the people that I was inconveniencing than anything I was having to go through. So it'd be fine.
What's up with these Eagles? You're going to play with the Eagles. That's pretty freaking cool.
That is cool. I'll say that. Be proud of it.
Like, that's pretty freaking cool.
Yeah, man. It's Eagles with Vince Gill. So it's just like, yeah. You know, I was talking to somebody the other day. You know, I saved up my money and when the Hell Freezes Over tour was out. And I bought me a ticket and my brother a ticket. And we were fourth row up in Charleston, West Virginia. And they played for 4 hours. And to this day, it's one of the greatest shows I've been to. So
they played for 4 hours.
They played us the Eagles for like 2 hours. And then the Eagles became the house band, so to speak. And they played everybody's solo stuff.
So like Stanley went and did his stuff.
And yep.
Walsh did his
Anything stuff. You can think of, yeah, that was solo stuff. So you got the Eagles and all their solo stuff.
Did you watch the documentary on CNN? That like the Eagles multi-part documentary? You ever see that?
No, I didn't see it.
Well, first of all, it's like 100 hours and way better than Face Off. So, and it covers like...
Is it on DirecTV on the bus?
It is probably not on DirecTV.
Oh, okay. Well, that's all my only entertainment. I don't have TV at home.
What are you watching? What are you and Morgan watching? Anything fun? Like
I'm a huge Game of Thrones fan. I love Game of Thrones. That, if I have a show, it's that. And Walking Dead, up to a point. I'm not caught up on Walking Dead yet, but those are the two shows that I have that are TV shows.
I watch Game of Thrones. I watch both of those shows religiously. With Game of Thrones, like, can they? Let me ask you two. Are you caught up?
I'm caught up in Game of Thrones, okay. So we can talk about whatever.
Okay, so I won't.
If you're not caught up,
yeah. If you're not caught up,
turn this off
just for a second. They're related, right?
I think so.
No, they're related.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's like aunt and uncle, or it's like aunt and nephew.
How do you feel about that? Like, do you hope they get to stay together, even though there's like this? How do you feel about that?
How do I feel about it?
Yeah, do you? Because I feel like I want them to get together. I don't care if they're related. Like, I'm from Arkansas.
Well, but
I don't care. Like, they, you know, they're the same back then.
Jerry Lee Lewis would do it.
Oh, man. Holy cow.
It was, what are we even talking about? Yeah, well, you know, that's a complicated question because they've set up a lot of this show not telling you that. And you want them to get together. They want you to want to get them together, and then they want you to feel weird about it because then they give you more information. And so that's kind of that show. I mean, they're...
But they would kill somebody?
Yeah. Oh, man, like the Red Wedding deal?
The Red Wedding... Even episodes in the first season.
Oh, yeah.
They kill Ned. I was like, how's it?
I thought the show was about him.
I thought me too. I was so pissed.
Yeah.
And it wasn't even the finale of the first season.
Right. I was like, what just happened?
I kept waiting for someone to come in and say, his head's on the chopping block. And
yeah.
When his head was chopped off, I think like my TV, my cherry was kind of popped up. Like, I don't trust TV anymore.
Right.
That was it.
Oh, no, the trust was gone at that point. But you're like, but what is this show actually about?
And I still kind of don't know. And I wonder if the Frozen Dragon, you know, and, you know, there's a whole thing with the Frozen Dragons. You're going to fight the other guy. Listen, I'm a Game of Thrones nerd. We could do a whole hour on Game of Thrones.
Okay.
No, we're not going to, but we could have.
I could go down the whole rabbit hole with you,
where,
man.
Where are you at Walking Dead?
Walking Dead? Oh, I don't really know. I'm a couple, three episodes into the current
okay, season. So you're pretty close then.
Yeah. I know they killed Glenn. And they may have lost me just this much, you know, just a little bit when Glenn got the
don't you feel like the they have to sometimes though kill the people that you really like and don't expect, so it keeps you on your toes.
But not Glenn.
I know Glenn was awesome because from the beginning, Glenn saved Rick from inside the friggin' tank.
Right.
You know, in Atlanta back in the day. Yeah, those apocalypse type shows. Like, I'm fascinated. Do you think you would survive?
Probably not. You know. Just because I don't do enough cardio.
So you think your physical limitations would be what
my
it was.
Physical, if you know, if I had to run from zombies, you know, because zombies don't get tired. I just need to do more cardio.
I would love it. Like, I would love during my life for the world to end like that. Like, that would be cool for me.
Are you serious?
Well, just think, this world has been around for millions of years, right?
Okay.
And if in our blink of the time that we're here, we experience the end of the zombie apocalypse, whatever it is, if we get to experience that, do you know how cool that would be?
No, because I got kids, man. That's not that.
Well, I don't. That's why I think about it differently.
If you had
then.
Kids, you would never ever say the words you're saying right now.
Probably a fair statement because I don't have kids.
Right.
But you got two. You got twins coming. Are you kidding?
I do.
I don't even know. I don't even know what that is.
I don't either. So we'll find out. I'll let you know.
How's Morgan? She pregnant?
She's pregnant.
I mean, how is she? Like, she good?
How is she? Is she pregnant?
Is she able to sing the same?
Oh yeah, no, yeah, she's great. And you know, she gets tired, but that's part of it. She's got 20 fingers and 20 toes in there moving around.
So. That's crazy, right?
Yeah.
Like I don't even. I don't
especially
even,
when you put it numerically like that, it's like there's 20 fingers and 20 toes.
I don't even know. Let me play some music here. How about this? I got some of this. And I've made a little money trying to untangle my mind. I blew it. Tell me about this song.
We want to know about it.
I guess I kind of want to know, like, because I hear your songs and I insert my thoughts into your music, which I think is what music is about. Like,
absolutely. I was talking about that in a different interview. How that's, I think that's the purpose of songs.
Well, then, okay.
It's for you, the listener, to insert yourself into it.
Did someone say that to you or did you say that to them?
I said that to them.
Good, because then I don't feel stupid. Because if I'm saying something someone else said, I'm just hacking.
No.
So we're basically the same. Cool. So that's why I feel like. I feel like songs, we all have our own identity with these songs. Like,
absolutely.
They exist. You write them for your reason, but I'm able to assign my identity to whatever you wrote.
Right.
So I'm always anxious to know what your identity is when you're writing this song.
I don't know that I have an identity when I'm writing a song, other than I'm trying to write a song that I think is good. And then the identity part of it creeps into it on its own. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense?
Sure.
Am I making sense
sure,
at all?
Sure,
like,
sure.
Like I don't consciously give a song an identity. But because I'm writing the song, whatever part of me is in that song is going to be there because I wrote the song. Am I talking in circles
too
much there?
No, you're not at all. Your identity comes out, and as it's completed, there you are. But
right.
you're not actually building it in any certain way.
Right. I don't sit down and go, I'm going to put myself into this song, necessarily. You know, but it's there whether you like it or not. That's the other part that took me a long time to realize is when you write songs, you can think you're writing the most fake song ever. But some part of you is going to slip in there that somebody's going to go, that was you right there. I heard that. That was when such and such was going on. You were writing, I know why you wrote that song, you know, even if you don't know why you wrote that song. So I'll plead ignorance on a lot of it.
You know, I told you my favorite. I have to listen to a record. Like, if I really love a record, I give it 100 listens, a record. And I listen to volume 100 times because it keeps a count. This song here, I'll tell you. This is my favorite song I think that you've ever put out.
This is my favorite song on that record.
I will listen to this song over and over again. Like, it just... I'm going to tell you how it makes me feel, then you tell me how it makes you feel. because I don't want to hear what you say and then it changing me. So let me tell you, like when I hear this song, it sounds like I hear like Zeppelin, like I hear like the background. That's what I hear. I hear like old Zeppelin type stuff. The guitar volume, it's up. It's higher than your voice at times, and I love how loud the guitar is. It's kind of the juxtaposition of your voice,
right?
And I think that was on purpose. I don't know if it was on purpose or not, but I think you're sending a message with the guitar, the tone, and how loud the guitar is. And I hear Death Row.
I can't look up enough to see.
It's just like a place in life when you're like, it's not really. I don't want to hear Death Row, the actual prison. No, it's not literal to me. But it's like, what's my death row? Like, where am I in my life? Like, where I'm in my death row?
Well, I don't want to minimize anybody's experience on death row by saying that it's, you know, any of us have anything to experience like that. But yeah, certainly we were trying, you know, I wrote this song with Mike Henderson, who I wrote a lot of songs with. And he's a great blues player. And this was originally written in more of a blues kind of Robert Johnson style, and that he does. He does a lot of great fingerstyle blues stuff, but I can't really do all that stuff. But we were having a day in the studio with this particular song where we had gotten nothing all day long.
What do you mean you got nothing?
We'd try things, nothing. We'd try something else, nah, that's not it. Track something, nah, we didn't get it. And so this is fairly late in the evening, and we were all just kind of whipped. And Dave started playing what is the kind of opening acoustic lick that became what all this kind of built around. And I took that song that I'd written with Henderson and sang it over top of this, and we were very much trying to live in the Led Zeppelin kind of area, you know, because we all love that stuff. And I just like it because, to me, when I hear things like this, it makes me feel, hopefully it feels badass, you know, like I'm looking for something to feel badass. I like songs that make me feel that way. Like, I'm not saying this in particular, I'm just saying songs, like you hear Back in Black. That Back in Black will make you feel a certain way every time.
Right. Oh no! It makes me want to fight, and I get right. I'll get beat up.
And I don't
I still want to fight every time, and I'll get beat up every time.
That's the way it makes me feel, but not in a way that you're going to actually walk out the door and get in a fight. But you're like, all right, I'm ready. And things that can get some kind of an emotional response out of you like that musically, man, that's what it's for.
That's my favorite song.
Yeah. Thank you.
I hear that, and I go, man, what's my death row? What am I in my life? I got to get off of death row. I mean, what you're writing about. That's what I feel. That's my interpretation.
Okay.
To start telling people that. Tell them you wrote that about me and my death row.
I wrote that song about Bobby Bones. You go on a record, I wrote that song about Bobby Bones and his personal death
row. And his personal death row. So, if you stop writing music right now, could you Tupac this thing and you just have music come out for the next 10 years?
Tupac?
Yeah. Like, because Tupac died, music's still coming out. If you stop,
I don't have things recorded.
But no. But if you stop writing right now,
could stop writing.
Would you feel comfortable that you have enough quality material that for the next 5 years you could put out records?
That's probably only 2 records, so yeah.
Okay. What if you did 2 records a year like you did this year?
Yeah, maybe.
Do you have a song you're sitting on right now that you're just like, man, I can't wait to cut this one next time?
There's several like that.
Yeah. Did you have to decide when you cut these two? Was it tough to not put songs on because you love them so much?
No, it's never tough because whatever moment you're in, it's, you're like, this is the time to do this right now. I feel like doing this one, you know. It's never tough to me in the moment, you know. If I have to sit down and make a list and do all that kind of stuff, I can't do that. My wife is great at that. But in a moment, in a day, like, what do I feel like playing right now? That's never hard, you know, for me. It's just like, oh yeah, I'm feeling like this. Let's play this.
Will a set list change night of show based on how you're feeling?
Sure.
Since you're not using tracks, you can pretty much do whatever you want.
Absolutely.
So you'd be like, you know what?
Drives an LD crazy.
Yeah. So will you write up a new set list every night?
I do write a new set list every night. And, you know, sometimes they vary very little if we feel like we're in a groove. But sometimes if you feel like you're getting stagnant in the show, like, I don't ever want us to feel too comfortable, too comfortable to the point where you're almost like, you know, going through the motions. Because that's bad. If we're just going through the motions, we're not really focused right. So we try to keep the sets. You know, we'll switch them up, replace songs we haven't played in a while, just to switch it up.
So, I listen to Johnson Brothers.
Okay.
I'm not gonna lie to you. It's rock and roll. This is rock and roll right here.
Yeah, well, we were trying to play rock and
roll.
I
mean, was this a rock and roll band to you?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Nothing but.
Like, the goal with the Johnson Brothers was to blank.
To play rock and roll.
Was it to be the biggest rock and roll band in the planet?
No, I don't think anybody had delusions of that. But, you know, it was to go play rock and roll. And, you know, to me, rock and roll for the sake of rock and roll is what rock and roll is. You know? But not that I'm any kind of authority on it, but. I like that, you know.
Steel Drivers. On the blue. Switch it up. Bluegrass here.
It is.
You know, bluegrass rock. It's a rock and bluegrass thing, though. Would you feel like that's fair?
This?
Yeah. Maybe not this, but in general, like Steel Drivers. You feel like they're a little more.
We lived on the outside edge of what was acceptably called bluegrass, you know. So. And I'm definitely not in any way a traditional bluegrass singer, and I'm not telling anybody anything that they don't already know. But we definitely played with the boundaries of what that means in that band, but not any more than some other guys did before us, you know, Tim O'Brien, Daryl Scott, Bluegrass Revival, things like that. But Tony Rice. A lot of cool.
You don't warm your voice up before a show, really, huh?
No.
That's so crazy.
I might sing a little bit, you know, just mess around with the band. But
you don't really, for as violent as you sing, that would be like.
Well, I kind of write the set as a warm up. You know what I'm saying? Like,
okay, that's fair.
I don't put the heavy hitter out of the gate. I put something that I can kind of get loose on.
What's the heavy hitter for you to sing? When you're putting a song, you're like, whew, I'm about to take this one on.
The heavy hitter, Sometimes I Cry is always a heavy hitter.
Boy, do you hit that? When you play that song, do you feel like you have to do the, like you have to do that?
Oh, yeah. Whatever I got in me is going to get done on that one. That's what people come, if people like that song, that's what they want
to
hear.
I love that song. On the record, too, when it goes like studio to live, you know the part of the... in that part of that track,
mm-hmm.
where it goes from studio and then at the end, it's like, you know, the clapping.
Well, that's just the people that were in the room.
Are you kidding me?
No.
In my mind, as you can tell, I know every freaking track that you put out. That's in people in the room, in the studio when you're recording that clapping?
Yeah, we cut that track. We had the record done. We had travel done. And we invited the people to the listening party at RCA, and they all had headphones and... Then we pulled like this thing. We're like, "All right, here's what we're gonna do. We're gonna do one more. We're gonna finish the record right now, and you're gonna be in the, watch it." And so we cut that in front of a bunch of press folks and everything.
I had no idea.
And that's them. Some of them had headphones on, and some of them were just in the room, you know. But the clapping is those people in the room.
I thought that was some kind of weird. You did a studio, and you like melded it with the end of a live performance.
No, it's an actual live performance with people in the room.
Man, did you know that, Mike? Look at what you learn when you ask questions. Who knew? When you ask questions, you learn things.
The people in the room.
Do you realize how big Chris Stapleton is?
I'm going to go about 260 right now.
No. Come on. Do you you're the thing. Because, and here's why. And it's because you don't try to be the thing. Isn't it crazy how cool people work? how the coolest people are the ones that don't try to be cool?
Well, I don't know if I'm one of the coolest people.
Okay,
or not,
you don't have to talk about you, but okay. Would you say that the people that you admire the most in creative land are the people that aren't out there to be admired the most in right. creative land?
Absolutely. You know, I will say the people that I have met that I believe to be cool definitely are not trying to be cool.
And that's what people feel about you. You are the biggest thing in our... I'm not even going to say... You're not even format-y to me. Like, I'm not a format guy. Right. I'm on country radio stations, but I love all music, and I've done all... I've done rock and sports and pop and country. And again, I'm a kid from Arkansas who grew up listening to Kiss and 96 country radio, but also was an alternative kid and a hip-hop kid. I signed a hip-hop record deal. You know, so I have all of this... So I don't even consider you in the... You're just a country singer, right? I hope that's okay for me to say that, because I don't...
No, that's fine. I don't like labels either, so you're not bothering me with anything you're saying.
But, like, you are the gold standard now to artists. Like, everyone's the next, you know, the next Michael Jordan. It's Kobe Bryant, the next Michael Jordan. It's LeBron James, the next Michael Jordan. But now everyone is, oh, this is the female version of Chris Stapleton. It's the next Chris Stapleton. And you got to hear it. Some of that's got to get back to you, right?
No, I don't, you know, I don't come into town that much. I don't, you know, I don't run around talking to people too much. You know, when I'm not on the road, I'm out, bought some land and I'm out in the middle of it.
And that's why you're cool. You don't even care. Listen to this.
It's not that I don't care. I don't want you to say that.
No,
I don't care.
You don't care what people are saying.
I care very much about... I don't care about what people are saying.
That was my point. You don't care what people are saying.
Yeah.
You don't really care about the person. You care about putting out what you feels good.
Right.
You don't
And
care.
That's the only thing you should care about.
Man, I need to take some lessons from you.
There's a scarecrow in the garden.
This, obviously, in my mind, was talking about Wizard of Oz, the movie. I was picturing you watching Wizard of Oz.
Really?
No, not as
But see, now people are going to be taking it and, like, turning the volume off of the Wizard of Oz.
And like Pink Floyd, matching it up.
Yeah, yeah, matching it up.
So what people don't know is, and I guess we waited to pretty close to the end to say this and admit this, but Volume 2, you can actually match it up with Face Off and turn Face Off on at the beginning. And turn it
and
matches.
We come full circle.
Full circle, yeah. All the way back around. Yeah. You feel good? Like you feel like in your life right now? You feel good?
Oh yeah.
What makes you happy?
What makes me happy? Oh, my kids make me happy, and my wife makes me happy, and you know, just getting to play music makes me happy. Playing guitar makes me happy. All the folks that I get to work with make me happy. So I'm a pretty happy dude. All that's pretty much all of my days right there. So
you feel like people ask a lot more of you now?
Absolutely. But I mean, that's part of the gig. You mean just like, do you get more asked to do things or just
both? Do you feel like at times Chris and Chris Stapleton are two different people?
Sure. But you know, not, and also yes, you know, like there's a dude that everybody, I don't want to talk about myself in the third person or anything.
No, I think it's fair to in the situation though, because I just asked you that, Chris and Chris Stapleton. So I think it's fair to.
Yeah, I mean, on one hand, I'm just a guy who, you know, is trying to raise his family and take care of his family, and like any other guy would. On the other hand, I'm something else. Or people perceive me to be something else when I'm playing music, I guess, that, you know, can sometimes be strange, but it's also, you know, like, okay, here's what I got, you know, and if that makes people feel good or lets people have a good time or forget about some other, you know, terrible thing they got going on for couple hours at a show, then that's a real high calling. So I'm happy to do it.
Got another one. I still think there's a Chris Stapleton conspiracy to win album of the year 2 years in a row. That's why I think about A and B. That's why I think Volume 1. That's why I think. Congratulations, by the way.
Thank you very much.
Do you feel like, because I mean, I was probably three rows over from you, and I was watching you. Is it surprising when they announce your name still?
Yeah. I mean, are you surprised when somebody gives you an award?
I hate it. I don't like awards.
Yeah.
I'm not comfortable with them. I don't.
Yeah. You don't know what to say.
I don't. Yeah.
Like the thing is that when you get an award, like, there's the immediate feeling of, oh, I didn't prepare a speech, and also I'm going to say something off the cuff that maybe doesn't make any sense, and then you walk off, and you're like, oh, I forgot this, or, you know, so those things are funny in those moments, you know. But, no, I don't ever expect them. I don't, you know, and someday my not expecting them will come true. So I'll enjoy it while we have the have our moment, and when we don't, we'll look back and go, wow, that was cool.
I got two questions and we'll wrap this up. Question one, what's your favorite picture you have in your house?
My favorite picture?
Yeah. Like, you think, your favorite picture.
Picture I have in my house. We're still halfway, don't have too many pictures hanging up right now. But, right now, it's probably my wife. Are you talking like a photograph or just
a photograph, like a memory, like a picture. You're like, man, I love it when I see that picture.
See that picture. We don't have a lot of pictures up in our house. It's weird. We have more like art and, you know.
What's your favorite piece of art?
Weird finds. You know, I used to be like a big flea market guy. You know, like, have all these odd things. There's a, I guess my favorite one is, my wife has this little tiny, oh, it's probably 6x4 framed picture of a rabbit that was given to her by, I believe, by our friend Paul Kennedy. Or maybe she got it because Paul Kennedy, I guess it's a British thing, the first of every month you're supposed to say rabbits the first thing when you wake up. Maybe that's something Paul does, I don't know. But it reminds her of Paul, and she has this little tiny, it's supposed to bring you good luck, I guess. And so there's this little tiny picture of a rabbit hanging in our house that's, beyond that, I have a plate that, there's also a plate that somebody gave us for our wedding that's a kind of a folk art painting of me and my wife that's the day we were married. It's traveled with us everywhere, and it kind of hangs in the kitchen. But those are the two that stick out in my mind.
I'm writing my second book, and it's on adversity, and it's basically failure, and how that the greatest successes are often the people that have failed the most and have continued to get back up, been told no, get up, do it again, learn, been told no, get up, do it again, learn. Was there ever a point, or what was the point for you where you were like, man, this is kind of my low. I don't know if I'm able to get out of this.
Just mentally?
Yeah.
It doesn't really have anything to do with anything professional, but you know, the day that my dad passed away, I got a call in South Carolina. I was down there taking my kids down there to the beach with their other grandparents. And I got the call. My brother called. So I took a little walk, kind of soaked that in. And, you know, I was there 2 days prior. We had played a show, and he had told me goodbye or whatever. And I could have stayed. I could have stayed 2 days. So my biggest regret in there, and I should have stayed. I should have stayed over, but I used some lame excuse like, you know, well, I got to get on the bus. The bus is leaving, you know. I could have figured something out. But so that was a failure in my mind as a failure of things that I should have done. And I don't have many regrets, but I do regret those 2 days. For some reason, those 2 days magically mean more than all the other days I could have been there saying hello or doing something with my dad. But that's probably, for me, that was a failure as a son, I guess. But, you know, you can't get those things back. But you do learn in those moments, you know, in moments, to try not to let the professional kind of outweigh the personal or steer it more than it should. And for me, that for me was the lesson.
Do you feel like it's given you balance with your family now and how you balance that?
Well, we do our best to and we're still very much working on the balance, because it's a very, it's a demanding thing on your time to go tour like we tour, or, you know the deal. It's when you have a moment where you're enjoying some success, you get, and I am not complaining in any way, shape, or form, but it gets very hard to say no to things, because for so many years you didn't have the opportunity to even say yes to anything. And then when you get in that moment where there are more things to have to either say yes or no to than you have time for, it can be an overwhelming thing. But hopefully I'm getting a little bit better at saying no to things in lieu of, saying no to things under the guise of the preservation of sanity and family and just, you know, balance, which I think is an important thing. The people that I admire the most in this business that have long careers, I think, are balanced people, in that they can turn that professional off for a minute and go enjoy themselves, do something they enjoy. I have the hardest time in the world going and just doing something that I enjoy solely for the purpose of me enjoying it. One of the hardest things in the world for me to do. My wife literally has to make me do things. She's like, go do that. You want to go do that. You'll enjoy it. And she's always right. But I have very little, I have a hard time flipping that switch, particularly in the moment that we're in. You know, I'm like, well, there's so much opportunity over here for us to do these things that are good professionally, but it's not always the healthiest thing personally. And so trying to find that balance, and I don't know, I've gotten off base with the question a little bit probably.
No, I don't think there is off base with the question. Well, let me say this. All professional things aside, first, just, you know, from a room one and two and traveler, and you know, it's just like you changed the landscape, whether you know or want to admit you have. And I appreciate that, and I also appreciate how kind you've been to me over the years, because you definitely hadn't had to have been.
Well, you, and that reciprocates to you. You've been always nice to me, solely on the fact, you know, that you like me and my music, not because at the time when you were playing things on your show, that wasn't the thing to do. So I certainly appreciate that, and I remember that, and I was real.
First time we talked, you were in the shower.
I called you at the house.
I called you at home, and you're like, hey, man, I'm in the shower. Can I call you right back? I was like, yeah, sure, why not? Call me right back. Yeah, so I appreciate that. I appreciate you. I appreciate you and Morgan both. You're always very kind to me. I've said before that we'll be at the biggest, craziest event, and there are famous people everywhere, and you're always like, eyeball to eyeball. So,
well, we know each other, so that's different, that. You know, and that's not, you know, whatever, all that other stuff, you know. It's just like, man, it's, you know, people are good. Good people are good people, and I would rather hang out with good people than, you know, a terrible person who's famous. You know, that's just me.
Well, I appreciate you. Thanks for listen, I know that your favorite thing isn't talking on a microphone. We just spent an hour talking on a microphone.
That's okay, but I wouldn't be here if I didn't want to talk on a microphone with you. So,
was this okay? Like, you?
No, it was great. Very comfortable, and you know, the recliner is a nice touch.
Nailed it, huh? Yeah,
the recliner's a nice touch. I had an alternate band that I wanted to form, and maybe I shouldn't give it away, but if this band ever comes out, it's called Recliner, where you play in a recliner.
You're just getting lazy now. That's a band. That's just a lazy band. Yeah.
Oh, maybe it's called Lazy
Band. Wow. Chris, good to see you, buddy. And I hope you continue doing it your way, regardless of.
Yeah, man. You too.
What sells and what doesn't? Just keep. I hope you just keep.
Well, doing I will. Your I don't way, know how man. To do anything else.
Chris Stapleton. And from A Room Volume 2, December 1st, right? Mm-hmm. I don't have the notes in front of me. I'm just going by my brain here. December 1st. And people are going to hear this way after that, too. But I hope you get to learn about Chris and go second, third layer with that. And almost in the NFL. That's what I learned.
Almost in the NFL.
Almost in the NFL. Love
not even close.
All right, Chris. Good to see you, boy. Thank you very much. Chris Stapleton.